drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. It's been almost 5 years since Abby May released her last record, Kiss My Apocalypse. And by the sound of it, it's been a pretty intense few years. But now the ARIA-nominated artist is back with a new album, Fruit. And she's my guest in the drawing room. Abby, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, look, I love fruit.
Good.
Do you love fruit too?
I'm pretty proud of it. I'm relieved that the past 5 years has not been only destruction, that there's been a degree of creativity that's come out of it. And I'm quite proud of the fruit of my labours, so to speak.
Not only destruction. We're going to go to that in a moment. Not only destruction. Tell me a bit about this new record. It's a very personal collection for you, right?
Yes, it's probably my most candid record so far. Every record I've made has been stories from my life, and you, obviously as a writer you sometimes exaggerate things in order to make more of a point, but this is definitely my most candid and intimate record for sure.
Why did you decide to go candid now?
Well, I'm quite a candid, open person. It's not necessarily the easiest way to be, but I felt like post the, the postal survey for marriage equality last year, I noticed that many members of my community, the LGBTQIA+ community, were suffering. And I'm a very supported person. I have great family and friends, and I don't experience a lot of homophobia in my day-to-day life. I guess that's what's known as called living in a bubble. But once this survey was unleashed upon the community, I felt, even as a supported and strong gay woman, I felt that my mental health suffered. I didn't feel as safe as I did in a community that was being deliberately divided by this campaign. Mostly I found the no side very difficult to stomach. I didn't see a lot of logic in it, and I thought it was just deliberately hurtful. And I certainly was hurt by it. And seeing as I'm a very strong and supported member of the community, I was very, very worried about people who were less supported, more isolated. We already have a high level of self-harm and suicide in our community, and I have no doubt that the stats will show that that skyrocketed during that hellish time for us. And so I felt like it was time to be very, very, very open and very candid about my sexuality. I've never hidden it in the past, but I haven't really spoken so openly about it before. And so by the end of the record, I decided to make it very, very clear that the record was a gay visibility record, that I'm a gay woman, that there's no question about it. And so there was a sense of duty to people who are more vulnerable than me driving that decision.
The survey was pretty recent. I assume it takes a long time to put a record together.
Yes.
So were these songs already on track? How much changed as a result of that duty you talk of?
Well, the spoken word parts were the final additions to the record, and I put those together right in the middle of the survey. It was funny. When I talk about the effect that it has, even when we got the yes, I think everybody wasn't so much celebrating as we were sort of relieved, but also still, I guess, tending our wounds. It was a strange time, and I felt like going, well, the album's coming out in 2018. If there's anything I can do, it's stand up and write songs and speak publicly like I am now. So in particular, the most candid parts, the most intimate parts of the record were done throughout last year before we finally locked the record off.
Opening up about your life like you've done, does it feel different as you get older?
As I've gotten older, I have found purpose as an auntie. I've found this kind of, I've had a really tumultuous 5 years with a brush with death, basically through a seizure on tour in 2013, and then an ensuing kind of battle with anxiety and depression, which was, I tried very sensibly to deal with through excessive intake of alcohol, which, many times I think could have killed me. And what I found though was that I had this urge to get better. and to deal with my sort of smothering issues that I was trying to deal with through alcohol, but, because I didn't want my niece and nephews to not be able to rely on me, and I wanted to see them grow up, and I wanted to hang out with them when they're adults and continue to be around them, you know, as someone whom their parents trust enough to babysit. And, you know, there's a purpose in that. And I think a lot of people feel that with the children in their family, that there's a kind of a protective role and that they're a lot more important than we are. And I think that that kind of pushed me to get through and to, like I said, be creative rather than destructive ultimately.
So it was family that kind of inspired you.
Absolutely. It was my saviour completely.
Wow. And that seizure that you mentioned, there was a lot of stress leading up to all of that, right?
There was. I mean, look, you know, I had two albums that were considered fairly big and they were fairly well known around Australia. We were getting a lot of radio play, and this Design Desire from 2011 and 2012, and then Kiss My Apocalypse, which followed in 2013. And, you know, we ended up being nominated for an ARIA, and, you know, we've been nominated for the Australian Music Prize twice and shortlisted for that, and we're touring all the time. And, you know, it got really hectic, and I was managing myself, releasing the records myself, apart from the second record myself, and financing everything, and, you know, tour managing, and, you know, dealing with, you know, some rock star babies, and, you know, just stuff like that. Rock star wrangling was part of the job, and it just got a bit too much, and I just had a seizure on tour out of stress about 4 days after the ARIAs, and it was obviously too much. And it just, I liken it to, like, you know, when you pull a lackey band too tight and then it snaps and you can't, you know, you can't really put the frayed edges together. So I still suffer from some degree of particularly anxiety, but I've got the depression under control, which I'm really relieved about. But, you know, I have a lot of physical anxiety and stuff. But, you know, if the seizure hadn't happened, I wouldn't be where I am today and who I am today. And I like where I am and I like who I am. So I'm, and in a funny way, quite grateful that it all happened.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis. Abby May is with me in the drawing room. Abby, we're about to hear one of your tracks now, Love Decline. What's the story here? What should I listen out for? Love
well,
Decline.
You know, I think I wrote this when I was feeling fairly disenfranchised, or fairly a bit sort of, you know, it was post-seizure. I wasn't, my brain receptors weren't quite reacting the way they used to, you know, the chemicals of the chemistry of love. And I had heard this older man say that, you know, you don't really fall in love like you do in your 20s once you're post-30. And I thought that was an incredibly sad thing. One of my main muses my whole life has been romantic love. There's nothing quite like it. I find it, you know, one of the great joys of life is to meet someone you have chemistry with and to fall in love with them. And I had struggled a lot emotionally post the seizure. You know, I felt very disconnected. I'd had this existential crisis. It's, you know, when you start thinking about the bigger things that have very little question, stuff that you have to just let go and allow to have no answer. That kind of, you know, passion and intensity is harder to let in. And so Love Decline became a story about that, basically.
Let's hear it. This is Love Decline by Abby May.
Oh, I hope there's no correlation to what I would do. And in low IQ, she said, you wanna come around, let your guard down, take all your clothes off, just get it all off. Call me, baby, let me help you with your top. I have to tell you every time I fall in love a little less each time.
And that was Love Decline by Abby May. And Abby is my guest in the drawing room. You're presenting Clam Jam at Perth Festival. It's a mini festival focused on female musicians. That's pretty exciting. There's a whole focus at the moment, I feel. It's kind of the moment, really, with the whole Me Too movement to kind of go, hey, there's lots of us and we're good.
Yeah. Look, I in 2016, I was on tour in Queensland, and I was trying to think of how to celebrate an album launch, a CD launch back at home, a single launch for one of the songs that is on Fruit. And I picked my favourite artists in my head, and I was like, okay, I'm going to approach her and her and her. And then I realised it's like an entire bill full of women. And I think we were having a beer out in far north New South Wales, actually, near a rainforest. And we were laughing about sausage fests as some sausages were frying on the barbie. And then I was like, you know, give me a clam jam any day. And then I realised that I'd put together a clam jam lineup and just sort of went from there. And it's been quite fun just showing an audience that, you know, when you actually do turn that sausage fest on its head and throw it out and focus on how incredible these artists are, that there really is no excuse to not have, you know, a massive amount of women on your lineup. There's so many great female artists out there. They deserve the spots. They'll absolutely blow your head off. And when you look at the clam jam that Perth Festival has curated for me, you know, we've got Thelma Plum, who's just an absolutely incredible talent, you know, a worldwide celebrated artist. Mojo Juju, who's a dear friend of mine and just one of the most incredible avant-garde blues, I would call her a genius. She has a way of completely commanding a room with just her voice and a guitar. She's also a great songwriter. And then there's Sex Panther, who were one of the foremost all-girl punk bands from the early 2000s. And they were a band that I became friends with when I was a much younger woman and just starting out as a solo artist in the Perth scene. They're a lot of fun. They have a song called Dropkick Your Lover, which is one of the best songs in Perth history, I think. And then, of course, we've got this local up-and-coming star called Carla Genevieve, whom I consider to be like the Australian Lucinda Williams crossed with a bit of Paul Kelly in terms of the quality of her songwriting, but her voice is just so incredibly strong. So it's a really exciting clam jam, the best clam jam ever. And we've had about 7 or 8 of them in the past 2 years. So clam jam, you know, I mean, it's a bit of a silly title, but, you know, it's just a bit of a spin on the old sausage fest.
I love it. Sausage fest, clam jams. We're going to go out with a song that you've brought in that's not your own, one you've chosen. What have you chosen
yes.
for us?
Well, in Perth, actually, at the first clam jam, I asked very dear friend and actually an idol of mine, Odette Mercy, and her Soul Atomics to perform. And they're so good that, you know, I do always remark that, you know, you have to be incredibly brave or incredibly stupid to actually play after them. They're really, really amazing band. I love to go and boogie in the front row when they're there. It makes Odette laugh a lot when she spies me. I never tell her that I'm going and then I just end up in the front row.
You're like the Where's Wally of
the crowd. Yeah, basically, definitely a Wally. So Odette Mercy and her Soul Atomics, this is one of my absolute all-time favourite songs. She's based in Perth. They're all based in Perth. And it's a testament to how brilliant the WA scene is. This is their song, Baby.
You've been such a good guest, Abby. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Abby May has been my guest in the drawing room. Her new album is called Fruit, and she's taking off around Australia on tour later this month, starting off at the Perth Festival on the 14th. Now let's have a listen to the song Abby's picked for us. This is Baby by Odette Mercy.